There he is.
Here I am.
I think about that. I we got like a one letter word to like distill everything about oneself. I think
you know, just having a simple sound for that couldn't make sense. The beauty is in its simplicity.
It's not that simple of a sound, though. It takes a long time. Think about T. You know, that would be simpler.
Yeah, that is true.
T-M.
How come consonants can't just be words?
Why is it only the vowels? Why are they so fucking special?
Like, you always need a vowel. Like, you can't just be like, here's a word. It's just the, you know, k. It has to be ka, k, ki, ku.
We've tried in this family to implement a consonant-only word ethos. And we've only gotten one letter into it so far. And it's the letter P. But you don't say P. You just say, okay, P. But it's a word.
You mean like to urinate?
No. It's a nickname that takes various forms. Like my daughter, you might know her, name's Jules, will call me okay peepee, like papa, but shortened it to peepee.
Okay.
And then just
I don't
pee.
Know if that's shortening it, but okay.
You're shortening it by spelling it.
Right. It's a shorter way to spell it if it's just the initials, the letter P followed by the letter P. Okay, got it.
Goes from papa to peepee. Again, saying it out loud is not shortening it. However, then it goes down to just P. But then it further shortens to just P. Okay.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're onto something. That can be a new trend.
It's short. Super short. Way shorter than I. That took like 1 second to say.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. I'm trying to say
Jesus.
I'm trying to say I.
I don't have all day.
It's not really. It's not really I anymore.
No,
it's more like an EH sound. I can't do it. Can't do
it's
it.
Tricky. Fucking tricky. So I think there's something there with the consonants. I think they've been, pushed down and forgotten long enough.
Yeah, I agree.
Agree.
Boy, we really, after over a year, the fans have been waiting. We really came out of the gate swinging with this.
Just
one.
Super strong.
Just super strong opening.
Did you get that Dennis DeYoung clip I sent you? I know it's 2 hours long.
I got the 2 hour long clip, but I did not click on it, being that it was 2 hours and we were about to start recording.
Yeah, you need to devote some time to that. Probably.
Yeah, definitely. I'll definitely be doing that. I'm in the middle of watching a 2 hour long
Caught in the Act
David Lynch clip.
Oh.
Where he's talking about his drawings with
not,
someone.
Not his house?
No, not his whatever kind of house that was.
Right.
Not that. But that was a pretty good one, too. What was that?
Any serious?
I feel I need to have that for the listener. Yeah, I'm gonna search it right now, just so they can know what they can go and try to find it.
I think you sent it. I just searched David Lynch house, but it's taken me everywhere.
I searched our like Shaq, but
yeah, it's
it's hobbled too much or something.
It's some sort of it's definitely an Eastern thing where the house is laid out in a certain way with, and I guess this was negotiable, but an ornamental decoration at the absolute center of the house where maybe there's something on the floor, but definitely on top of the house. There, it smacked of feng shui
a little bit, but it's different. It's Vedic.
Vedic, that's
Vedic is the thing, but it's
and the builder he was talking to
a word for it, one of the Vedas. It was a something.
Yeah, Vedic.
But yeah,
but the builder kept mispronouncing that, and Dave kept correcting him, but he just couldn't get it. But it's like the front door must face east. Or north is kind of okay, but east is the ultimate.
And he wanted to build, because I guess they have these large structures in India that conform to this architectural tradition that comes from the Vedas, which are like the original scripture of the Hindu religion.
Mm-hmm.
But David wanted to build a bungalow in accordance with this. That could theoretically be moved around.
He's a very bungalow-esque person.
You know, the bungalow...
The dude lived in a bungalow.
He did. Oh, that reminds me. Shit. I saw an article and saved it. What did they call them? It was talking about the from L.A., the disappearing, bungalow courts.
Yeah.
And there was lots of pictures, and they all were very much like the dude's place. And it was singing the praises of the bungalow court. And I have to agree, that's a pretty great, little living situation, right? It's kind of having an apartment, but you have your own little space. You got, the greenery around you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
But provided you get along with your neighbors.
Well, that would be true of an apartment. I mean, here's the... they're not necessarily... I don't see it as... Maybe a replacement for a house, but better than an apartment.
It's a little different than an apartment, though, because you share, a common courtyard.
Mm-hmm. Versus where everybody, having no courtyard, I guess.
Yeah, or, a stairwell, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody's hanging out in a stairwell. I mean, I guess we've hung out in plenty of stairwells in our time, but it's like there's an outside living area, a courtyard. Yeah.
Yeah. Creates
a shared courtyard, a community.
Yeah, kind of. I think it's
and then you can shit talk, the bad neighbor, you can have your landlord come over. And say, rent was due on the 9th.
Yeah.
It's already the 10th.
That's kind of maybe the natural living condition for humans.
Yeah.
Although communal, I'm really basing separate. That on nothing very good.
Yeah, that's par for the course.
Yes. Well, it was reminding me of if you ever visited Plymouth Plantation in Massachusetts.
No, I have not.
Which is the recreation of the pilgrims and how they lived. They came mm-hmm. here. You can go at one part of Plymouth, you can go and you can visit the Mayflower, have a recreation of that and walk on it and learn. And then they have another place where you go and you're just, it's kind of in essence a recreation of their settlement. And it's very much like a bungalow court. It's a bunch of little tiny, in this case, even tinier than the bungalows, little one room,
hut.
Shacks or huts, for lack of a better word, just all kind of arranged in a pattern. And everyone had their little
mud
hut.
And sticks.
Yeah, everyone had their own little hut.
Did you see Plymouth Rock when you were there?
Yes.
Isn't it two strong humans could almost lift it up. Like, it's not that big.
Yes. Yes. I only have vague recollections, but yes, it is something like that. It is not what you'd expect. I remember right. it being not what you'd expect, but I can't really conjure a full image of it right now.
I remember seeing the Statue of Liberty for the first time when I was a kid, and it was like, man, I thought that thing was 5,000 feet tall, you know? And it's like, oh, that's it?
I mean, sizes get deceptive because you even, you know, you can go to the top. You can, like, walk around in, like, the crown or whatever, right?
Yeah, apparently.
I've never been.
No, thank you. All of a sudden, it would seem super tall.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's my point. Like, you look at the Statue of Liberty. Oh, yeah, there's little people walking around in the crown. It must be huge. But really, it's still not that big.
It's not that big. It's not that big. Like, I thought it was, like, as tall as the Twin Towers, you know? Like,
right.
Fucking, or like something it's the American, Lord of the Rings.
The pride of America, the American landmark, dwarfs everything.
Yeah, it does not.
No.
Or, like, when we went and saw the Hope Diamond, and Jules, my daughter, I think you know her. You know, we turn the corner and it's like, there's the Hope Diamond, the hugest diamond in the world. She's like, okay.
Right.
Because you imagine it to be the size of a house, but it's like
the size of a
barely
softball.
The size of your fist. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, whatever. Yeah. It's all relative, man. You know, I was clicking through a little bit on the last episode that we recorded, and we were talking about AI-generated imagery. And I feel like even since then, the progress they've made with AI-generated imagery is gobsmacking.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at this point, you have to expect to be gobsmacked almost every day.
Yeah.
At the rate this stuff can grow.
And it, like, you have to really, really look at something that's been AI generated to, you can kind of still see some like trademark hiccups, but sometimes not.
Right. I mean, a lot of times what you can do is continue to work on it to get rid of those hiccups, right? And, like, if you know you're going to be sharing it out in the world and you want it to look real or not look AI-generated.
How would you work on those hiccups? Like, sometimes there's a problem with, like, someone's walking or an animal's walking.
Yeah.
Their feet kind of blend together a little bit. How would you work on that?
Well, what you would do, and I was thinking more of images when I said that than video, but the first thing do is you would just ask it to keep generating it. Like, you could say, okay, I want this. And maybe it gives you, like, okay, here, I just generated 5 options. And you can be like, well, these first 4 are shit. This 5th one's pretty good. Or maybe you have to generate 100. You know, you still have to kind of use your human judgment through it. It's not like it just, you say, I want this, and it gives you the perfect thing instantly.
Right, right.
The other way with images, and I really don't know about the video, if the video has an equivalent to this, but like the video, the images you can do like in painting or what in Photoshop's called generative fill, which you're probably aware of, where you can kind of like, okay, like I've used it like, okay, here's a picture, but like this hand looks weird. So you just kind of select the hand and you just are like, generate a hand here. And you keep like, and it's, now that's not something good. Go again. Go. You just keep doing it till it like looks right. Or right enough for your tolerance.
Yeah. We're teaching.
But I'm far from an, well, I don't want to say I'm far from an expert. I'm kind of an expert, but.
You're proficient.
Proficient. That's a good word. Yeah.
Expert. Who wants anybody who, you know. That's not a label I would self-apply.
Expert.
Smacks of hubris.
is just a fucked up word coming back. You know, if we want to go back to words and sounds, like an expert just sounds like something you don't want to be just by the sound of an expert.
It's like very, the Jesus. He's been reformed. He used to be a pederast, but now he's not. He's an ex-pederast. He's an expert.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Expert. Yeah, it's just not right.
Expert. Used to be a pert. Now I'm an expert. I'm an expat. Yeah. Don't. Yeah. You're not an expert, Brad.
No.
You're proficient.
My goal is to never be an expert in anything.
Mm-mm. Pert all the way. What else has been going on? How's your practice going, or is that out of bounds?
You mean my Zen practice?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that's out of bounds. I don't know how much I really could say about it, but it's going good. It's going really good. For the listeners' benefit, I'll mention that about a year ago, I started practicing Zen Buddhism regularly. I attend a local temple.
You've been dabbling for a while, but
what's that?
Seems like you've been dabbling for a while.
But I've dabbled for a very long time. I've dabbled for like pretty much like two decades at least.
Yeah,
but now I'm not dabbling. Now I'm working toward becoming proficient, so to speak, if that's even possible. So yeah, it's good. It's a big change for me, I think.
What's the biggest change?
I think, well, what I meant by that was it's just a change in how I'm approaching life and spending my time, really. You know, like, I don't know that I could. Just going from being someone that doesn't practice to someone that goes to practice is intrinsically a change, I guess, is really all I meant by that. You know, I spend a lot of time paying attention to my thoughts. I spend a lot of time contemplating. I could even say feeling, experiencing existence.
Life? Okay. Existence. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's a change.
I'll put it there.
No, you're thinking about how you think.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I'm trying not to go too deep into the jargon, I guess. But
I was kind of thinking about more practical.
Too weird. Like, not weird isn't the right word, but I guess.
Sanctimonious.
Well, the hallmark of Zen is it can't be transmitted with words. You know, words fail.
It's an experience.
That being said, there's countless, probably billions of words written on the topic over the last 1,000 years. Right. So, right. And lots of
longer than that, I'm readings. Sure.
Well, I'm thinking of Zen. Yeah, probably longer than that. I mean, 2,600 years ago, we had the Buddha near what's the current day border of India and Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, those teachings.
It's so much farther west than I normally think about the Buddha.
You normally think of further east, like Japan or China, yeah. You mean? Yeah.
Well, not that, but like eastern border of India with mm-hmm. like, I don't know, fucking Mongolia or something.
Yeah.
Or China.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was western side.
Different world back then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
what are borders?
But yeah, eventually those teachings went to China, where it became Chan Buddhism, which it kind of mixed with Taoism a bit. And then it went to Japan, I want to say not, in like the 1100s.
Not Taoism, Taoism.
Well, either or.
Okay.
I think it goes both ways. But.
All right.
And then. You know,
they're
around
pretty cool like that.
1100, 1200, somewhere in that area. It went over into Japan from China.
Mm-hmm.
Brought there by, and you know, Gomeo's listening. He's probably like, "You fool, you're messing up
the you fucking history, idiot." But
it is, you know, by Dogen Zenji. So anyway, so that's where I was getting the 1,000 years from.
Not really worried about that. Time is a construct.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, like, how it affected you in your day-to-day life. And it's mostly just thinking about how you think.
Well, I think, okay, so big difference is, if we really want to get into this.
I do.
Do I really want to get, I don't know. I think difference is, sure. Well, we, the proverbial we, the royal we.
Mm-hmm. Editorial.
The editorial. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think, I don't know what to say about it, really. I mean, I have lots of ideas of what to say, but I don't really know. I'd simply say that I am practicing, and I would say I'm practicing almost all the time.
Almost continuously.
Yeah.
With every interaction that you have, whether it's a work meeting or eating a bagel with a thick layer of cream cheese on it.
I would say if I'm eating a bagel, during some part of that bagel eating, I'm practicing.
Can you explain that? Like, are you thinking about where the bagel came from, how it was constructed, how many people had to be involved in it? Like what's the thinking there? And I know it's impossible to do because, you know,
yeah,
I'm not practicing.
So on one hand, I am thinking that. On the other hand, I am simply experiencing the pure bagel.
I mean, you don't have to be a Buddhist to enjoy a fucking bagel.
Right. Well, enjoy is an interesting word. That's where things are going to.
Yes.
It's an interesting word to me. Right.
Yeah. I want to hear about it.
But, you know, here's the thing. I'm not really qualified to talk about this at this level, probably.
You're more qualified than I am.
That is true. No argument there.
So, like, I enjoy a bagel. I eat it. I experience the textures, the flavors, the smells, the sight of it, the way it feels when I swallow it and I'm not hungry anymore. Like, mm-hmm. I enjoy all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So what's different when you enjoy a bagel?
Well, I'm not saying I enjoy the bagel.
You don't enjoy a bagel.
I said I experienced the bagel.
Okay. Well, you said enjoy was an interesting word.
Yeah, it was an interesting word because I have to really think how that applies.
All right. So how do you experience the bagel then? Do you get any enjoyment from eating a bagel?
Yeah, I definitely get enjoyment.
But then that enjoyment,
I also
layer.
Recognize that that enjoyment is a mental formation. But I also don't want to give the impression that it's just all about your mind and thinking about things, because it's also about even deeper than that, right? I think, so I would say there's the Heart Sutra, which is the heart. It's called that because it's the heart of the teaching. And this is in Mahayana Buddhism, which Zen Buddhism is part of that branch, right? And so I would say, look into the Heart
Mahayana
Sutra.
Mahayana is like an overarching umbrella, and Zen Buddhism is underneath that somehow?
Yes.
Sort of?
Yes. Okay. There are two or three main schools of Buddhism. The Theravada, the Mahayana, and the other one, which if I say it, I might screw it up. The Vajrayana or something like that. Tibetan Buddhism falls under that. Mm-hmm. It's more or less Tibetan Buddhism.
Yeah, I remember learning about this in the world religions class. Yeah. I failed.
Yeah. But what I was saying, you know, the Heart Sutra, which talks about emptiness, which is a term of art, which does not mean what I think we would normally think of as just empty, the word emptiness, what we might think of that as being. But really, it talks about the... So if all things are empty... Yeah, I don't know. I can't talk about it, man. This is a bad topic. More or less, it... So there's like, you know, there's... More or less, there's nothing. There's emptiness, meaning that all phenomenon are ultimately empty. Meaning there's nothing you can point into that phenomenon that is uniquely that, right? Like, there is... You can't take... Brad and divide them up and say there's the piece that's Brad and that's the piece that's not Brad. That's one way of looking at it.
All right.
But you know, it follows from this, right? In essence, like, you know, there's kind of a long list of things. Like, there's no birth and no death. There's no rising and there's no declining. There's no purity. There's no defilement. Because all those concepts are empty.
Okay.
Which now we're getting back to the mental, kind of the mental gymnastics. But really, I think it goes beyond that to something you can feel. And it's a way of...
Experiences are neutral.
It's something that you can... It's not just something that you think about or like train your mind. I don't want to give that impression at all. It is something, it's much more something you do or you can do with your heart just as much with your mind. And I'm butchering it by saying that. Everything I say, I'm thinking, well, here's the way that's not the way it is, right? Which is why it's so hard to talk about. And I will say, like, you know, yes, as someone who is a relatively new practitioner, right, I'm certainly not the best representative to make sense of this. But all I can say is for me,
you're my representative though.
I have a great, I do feel a great interconnection with everything that exists. I spend time sitting on my cushion and practicing
on the floor.
This is where we go back to the chat we had before. Yeah, the cushion's on the floor. Well, there's a cushion on the floor, and then there's a cushion on top of that cushion that I sit upon.
Two cushions, two chalfonts.
Exactly. Like a big cushion, right? Like a mat. It's more like a mat, mm-hmm. kind of.
Yep.
And then a little cushion that's like the little, you put your butt on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a zabutan and a zafu, if you want to get technical. And these are, again, Japanese terms because the tradition that I am practicing in, it comes through Japan.
But is the smaller cushion donut shaped?
A donut without a hole.
So a cylinder then.
It's like a very squat cylinder. Cylinder verging on disc.
Isn't a disc a cylinder?
Well, this is where we get, I don't know.
It's not two-dimensional, is it?
I don't know that a disc has to be two-dimensional. Like,
what?
A disc doesn't have to be two-dimensional. But, like, if you took a piece of cloth that was in the shape of a square, would you call that a rectangle? I mean, it technically has some height to it or depth or whatever word you want to use for that. Of course it's
a rectangle. Do you mean, would I call it a cube?
Right. Yes. Yes, what do you call it?
I thought you were getting like super fucking deep on me here and I was out of my element.
No. Would you call it a cube? Yes. Or a rectangular solid, I guess. Yeah, I don't know what the word would be. You obviously wouldn't call it a cube because they're not, all the dimensions aren't equal. So what's the other word?
Because we're too big to really discern the height of a thin piece of cloth. Like, it's just, it's helpful in like everyday communication to just say, yeah, that's a rectangle, not a cube.
Yeah. Well, I think whatever. The same thing with a disc. Like, a disc is technically a two-dimensional thing, but like a frisbee is also like a disc because it's like, it's thin enough. Right. We just call it that.
Thin enough. Yeah.
I feel this is too
in
thick
the parlance
to call
of
it,
our times.
I guess you're right.
It's easier to just say disc.
Yeah. But I guess you're
right. But if you were one atom tall, You would not call that a disc. It would be a towering, like, galaxy.
I would say Yes, and I just was just proving my point because I said this is too thick to call a disc. But I feel it's not thick enough to call it a cylinder. There's some middle ground. There's some hole that you're now exposing in my words that classify the world. Like, if a cylinder gets too squat at some point, I don't want to call it a cylinder. But it's still not thin enough, I would call it a disc.
It's like a...
So I guess I would have to technically call it a cylinder, but I never really thought of calling something that shape a cylinder before this moment.
It's a blanket. It's a circular blanket.
Yeah, it's not really a blanket. I mean, it's thicker than that. It's like a donut shape. So it's thicker
than a blanket.
I wouldn't call a donut. A donut without a hole. A hamburger bun, if you would. Like, I wouldn't call that a cylinder, but I guess it is a cylinder. I'm going to have to concede that it's a cylinder, even though I would not call it that.
It's a rounded cylinder.
I don't have anything else to say about it.
All right. We don't need to, you know, this is just about the shit you're sitting on here. So yeah. Well, let's move past it.
It's easier to talk about that than to talk about this, but I forgot where I was going. But yeah, you know, I sit,
you stare at the wall.
Well, in this, which is Soto Zen, when you sit, you sit facing the wall, or, you know, you're looking out at nature. But, you know, if you're in like a group in, let's say, a meditation hall, you face away from each other. You face outward. That's the tradition. Okay. Now, I believe Gomyo is in a different tradition where they sit facing in. Also Japanese, but again, there's so many different traditions.
Yeah.
So not to like emphasize the sitting outward, but yes, where I go, we sit outward, facing the wall.
Does the color of the sitting cushions, spheres, discs, cylinders matter?
I would say they don't matter. I would say, again, in this tradition, muted colors are traditional. Brown, black, earth tone type things, because it's, I'm just going to say, it's the tradition.
But you had to, you don't, like, want go too much on flashing, Amazon.
Too much stimulation of these bright colors and different colors and stuff.
When you went on Amazon and picked it out, though, you had to choose a color.
I did. I picked brown. I ordered it from Dharma Crafts.
And I'm just wondering how that factors into the whole thing.
Intention
behind the choice of color.
Yeah.
Does that affect anything?
I don't know that it technically affects anything. I mean, ideally, right? So this is not a thing where you per se go like, oh, I'm going to be in a perfectly silent space and no interruption and I can't hear whatever's happening outside. You know, like
the business papers printing out.
Yeah, like it's not about necessarily. I mean, that may be, again, like how you intend to approach it or you try to create a space like that. But again, I think the very core of Buddhism is that, you know, you're never going to do that. There's always going to be things in the way. Like, there's always going to be something, right? The dog is going to bark. The baby is crying in the other room. The, you know, we're all starving because the crops didn't come in. Like, there's always, like, you know, like, so, you know,
what some people say is, what, shit on your shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what some people say is, like, you know, what gets in the way is the way, right? Meaning you incorporate that into what you're doing. So ideally, I would say the color, no, does not matter. And I would say even so far, like, especially in, like, you know, the level at which I'm practicing and in our American culture, like, I don't think the color really, that was probably the least of my concerns. But again, traditionally, you would go with a muted color.
But you kind of clicked around, like, ooh, here's the brown one, here's the black one.
I
just picked
brown because that's what we use at the Zendo that I go to.
All right. But you did pick it. You had to make that choice.
They did have a choice of colors.
And did you contemplate, like, go back and forth a little bit, or it's like, nope, just brown?
Oh, just brown. I didn't need to overthink it.
But did you put any thought into it? Was there any, like, maybe I'll just get black?
To be honest, I can't remember. There probably was. I'm going to say may have been 2 or 3 seconds of, I wonder what I should get.
Right. Okay, but not any the brown or the muted mango.
Yeah. No, I definitely wasn't tempted by any saucy color like a muted mango.
Okay. All right, so then you sit there, not necessarily staring at the wall, but since you're not, when you do it by yourself, there's not a group, so there's no, like, I don't understand what facing outward would mean.
Yeah, if I don't have to face.
By yourself.
Yeah, by yourself, I don't think it matters so much. I think generally not having, you know, again, what gets in the way is the way. I don't think you need any of this. I think looking at a wall is good. It just removes elements, right? Like, you're not looking at what's there.
Minimizing.
Right? Yeah. So all things being equal, I'd say it'd be preferred to look at the wall or, you know, into an empty room or a minimalist room or something like that. Sure. I guess.
Not outside.
Or outside. Outside is kind of a different way.
Yeah.
There's some differences to that. But yes, definitely it's traditional to also do this in nature and cultivating that connection to nature through that.
You don't close your eyes.
No.
Your eyes are open.
Yes. Your eyes are open. I mean, traditionally, you would have your eyes kind of, you know, soft focused, kind of into the middle distance. You know, you're not necessarily staring at anything.
Yeah.
Or, you know, keeping them wide open, relaxed.
Eventually, the vision kind of fades away a little bit.
Yeah.
Sounds relaxing.
It can be. So there's different layers to this. Right. I think on one hand, it is relaxing. And I think there is a stage in which it is just good for yourself. Right. To disengage from everything.
Yeah.
I would say, again, ultimately, if you're doing it as kind of like an escape or like a relaxation, like a therapy or something, it's not quite the same. I think ultimately you are also aware as you're doing this, you're also, again, you're cultivating this interconnection to everything. And through that, you're also experiencing and contemplating all of the pain and suffering of the world at the same time.
But that doesn't, I do that anyway.
Yeah. Well, but it also doesn't mean that you, and this is where it gets really tricky, right? And I can say some things that are, you know, like, I mean, they can be really taken out of context and they're easily and stuff. But I think there's in some way, on some level, there's some way in which you maybe make peace with it or accept it. That's not to say you don't accept, you don't work to minimize those things. It's not like you accept it like, well, I just accept it, or what are you going to do, right? It's not like that. But it's also, it's getting in connection with an ultimate truth that kind of transcends all of this. And that's where maybe it becomes kind of spiritual. It's kind of like, in my mind, it's a completely non-dogmatic spiritual practice.
Which is why it's hard to explain with words, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although we're getting uncomfortably close to the term unvarnished truth.
I mean, I'm not sure what you mean by that in term exactly, but it what it makes me think is like when you're doing this practice, you are getting a lot closer to the unvarnished truth, but you get so much to the unvarnished truth that you normally might think the truth needs a little varnishing, but if you can get all the way past the varnish, you realize you never needed any varnish. I don't know if that makes any sense or not.
It does.
It's something to contemplate.
I'm contemplating it. And again, better believe it.
It's again in the Zen tradition, right? Like it's very much considered Zen is transmitted outside of words. Right. That is its
kind of
difference, I think, in other schools of Buddhism.
I'm putting you on the spot here, and I'm sorry about that because I know it's difficult to explain.
The legendary origin of Zen Buddhism is the Buddha was giving a speech, a discourse. You know, he's speaking to his, you know, thousands
using words.
People using words. But what he did was he picked up. Well, this one time he didn't use words. They're all waiting to hear what he did. And he just picked up a flower and held it up. And one of the guys in the crowd saw it, instantly knew what the Buddha meant by it, and was enlightened. And then
he took a real shortcut, didn't he?
Yeah, and then his...
Do not pass go, do not collect $200. Yes. Wow.
And then his... So that is the beginning of this tradition. And again, that's legendary.
Yeah.
We can talk about the legendary things and does it matter that they're just legendary or not and blah, blah, blah.
At least it's a mythos.
Yeah.
It sounds like a John Cage song.
I mean, I don't want to offend anyone if there's anyone out there that is like a fundamentalist Zen person that's like, no, that literally happened. But
hey, you're doing your, you know what? If they're offended by that, then they haven't practiced enough.
Right,
come on.
Right. It's kind of the funny contradiction Zen fundamentalist. Like,
right.
But yeah.
Yes. shit. That's good. I think you really brought it home with the lifting up the flower.
Right. And
it's probably just a legend, but you know.
Yeah.
That's a good way to convey it. Like, fuck, I get it.
Yeah. And Gomyo, if you have any notes for me, you know, I'd love to hear them. If you're out there.
Yeah.
Still after all this time.
After all these years.
I could have done it probably I feel like I had some obligation to do a better job than I did, but you know, it is what it is.
I think you did a great job. You're not claiming to be an expert.
Right, exactly. So, I'm just a current pert.
You're just a current pert. A current pert.
Yeah.
I'm a current pert. See? Lots of C's and P's. You can really shorten it. I'm a You can get it real short. You can get it real short. I've sent you like 20 videos in the last, I don't know.
You have. Week. I have not watched them. I'm sorry.
I know. I love know. To no, keep up I'm with sorry.
Them. I love I'm to sorry. Keep up it's, with them. I love it's when too I much. See you sent me one, but I've just been.
It's too much.
In my own little world, too much the last handful of days that I just have not. Really been attending to anything anyone
I can't
sent
help
me.
Myself.
Yeah, no, they're always good. And that Insta algorithm is so dialed in.
I know.
What happens is you send me, let's say 20. I click the first one and I'm like, oh, that's awesome. And then I just kind of go to the next one. And then I end up spending an hour just scrolling through videos
for
that
the
are
one,
all fucking
yeah.
awesome. But I've still only watched the first one of yours. Yeah.
Right.
Then I have to be like, oh, yeah, I have to go back and see the next one. But, yeah, it's that algorithm is wicked, man. It's dangerous.
There's one.
It's too good.
Like, we've seen this kind of shit before, but it's like they used like a phantom camera or whatever, you know, 20,000 frames per second mm-hmm. with a little syringe with a water drop into the glass.
I did see that one.
Okay.
I did right. see that one, yeah. I
must and it's have clicked on how, that. Like, the little ball of water, tiny little droplet just rests on top of the water due to surface tension, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But over and over again, smaller and smaller and smaller, it keeps happening.
Yeah.
But when you watch it real time, it's just like he goes, bloop, and the water just goes in, bloop. I don't know. That one, like, again, we've seen this kind of thing before, but shit, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much happening.
So much.
Everywhere around us. Yeah.
Right. And just in the interaction between a drop of water and a glass of water, just in that little moment. And then you try to zoom out and it's like, oh my, fuck it. Too much, man. Too much. Too much. I want to have us both watch that Dennis DeYoung video.
Okay.
For next time.
Okay.
Because I'm really excited. Because
so
I
in
15 only, like,
months we'll discuss the Dennis DeYoung video.
Yeah, in 2025. Oops, mm-hmm. didn't mean to do that. In 2035, yeah, we'll discuss that. But, like, I just scrubbed around, and Joss Whedon sent this to me. And he's like, just go to this timestamp. And I didn't do that. But I already heard slash saw, like, two things that I had no idea about.
Okay.
Concerning wow. Styx. And I was like, holy fuck. So I'm really looking forward to it.
You're discovering you're no longer the expert on Styx. You thought you were the Styx pert, but you're just the pert, regular
I'm
old
a non-pert.
Pert.
Regular old pert.
You have yet to have the pert removed. Like, it's right. an interesting concept, because usually you think becoming an expert is adding things, but really you're removing things.
You're removing it.
You're removing yeah. all of that pert.
All the pertitude.
Yeah. And then, you know, and there you go. This brings us forward, because that's a very, I think, Zen concept, right? Right there.
Because then it's
Zen
nothing.
Concept. Yeah, well, it's also about, you know, unlearning beginner's mind. You got to get rid of all your programming and baggage, you know?
I once was a pert. A poem by Adam Welch.